If you enjoy Astronomy FM Radio, please let us know with a small donation. We do rely on your support, and it's true. Every little bit counts.
AFM. You're listening to AFM Radio on astronomy.fm, around the world and beyond.
Arr. Coming up next, it's time for an AFM Radio original program, Space Pirate Radio, brought to you by the Voice of Astronomy Media.
This is AFM. It's Space Pirate Radio times, Buckos, here on Astronomy.fm Radio. That means it is another Wednesday evening, and this one happens to be August the 30th, 2017, 9 o'clock in the evening for those of us here in the eastern portion of North America, Universal Time. That makes it Thursday morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, August the 31st, 2017. And, of course, that means our chat room is wide open for you to come on board and join our crew, Space Pirate Ship Argo. So come on over. Go to the homepage. You'll see where it says radio chat. Or just type in astronomy.fm/chat. And either way, it'll get you to the login. Type in a name that I can pronounce, preferably. And then you will you'll be here. You'll be part of the crew. You can ask me questions on the air. I'll try to answer your questions. I'll try to catch them best I can. Or people in the chat room will answer your astronomy questions also. So come on over and join us. My co-host tonight, Diane, is not available, so it's just you and us here tonight. So, yeah, if you got any topics to go over, more than happy to cover some topics you want to do, too. Let me say hi to the crew first. We got, I'm in here, of course, Richie, Black Projects, Glenn, Plaid Mac, Evil Spock, Plaid Joan, Plaid Sister, and Observing Space. So glad to have you here, everybody. Good to know that you're listening in and part of the crew tonight. So, all righty, let's start out with the usual, because the usual is actually kind of nice right now. That, of course, is the sun, and we've got two, yes, count them, two big sunspots just rounded the corner on the sun right now. So let me put a link in our chat room for you to go check that out. I usually go to the SOHO website at NASA. If you just type in the word SOHO and add the word sun to it, it'll get you the spot right to the homepage there. Let me put a link into our chat room, though. You can also pick up the link on our Space Pirate Facebook page. And you can, if you're listening into the repeat, you can also check out the links and figure out what I'm talking about, too. So, all right, here we go. Really nice couple of spots right now. So good reason to not pack away, hopefully you haven't done it already, your solar glasses from the eclipse last week. Yes, still good. These spots might be big enough to see naked eye. I was looking at them with my binoculars, which I think is about 7, 10 power, something like that. Special solar binoculars, filters built in. And I could detect three of the spots. There's some faint spot group just rotating off. That's active region 2672. Could not detect those in the binoculars. Maybe if I mounted them on a pair of mounted the pair on a tripod and held them steadier, I might be able to pick them up that way. But not quite. A little bit too small in that spot group on the western edge of the sun. But definitely the stuff that's on the eastern edge, which is two active regions. The main one designated 2674. And a minor one just south of it, 2673. So you got a whole 2 weeks of solar observing. Don't put away those solar scopes yet. Don't put away those solar glasses, because, yes, you might actually be able to see these spots naked eye. Hopefully we'll get some activity. There's been some, I think, minor flaring activity out of the spot, that main spot group so far. Hopefully it'll continue and give us something quite nice as it rotates towards the center of the sun. And if we do get some flaring towards the center, when it gets through the center of the sun, of course, that also indicates more auroral activity around the polar region. So getting close to the equinoxes, that means north and south poles should pick up some aurora. Actually, it's kind of a double shot of aurora this time right now, right around the equinoxes. Not fully understood, but there does seem to be more auroral activity right around the equinox time, and that's where we're at right now. Some places have actually been reporting auroral activity, and if this spot region continues to grow, or at least become active, if the magnetic fields kind of fluctuate in there and flare up,
And yes, we could actually get some more intensified auroral activity along with the quote unquote normal activity right around the equinox time. Not sure why. Well, hopefully you got some clear skies and hopefully you're at the latitudes where you actually be able to see something. We'll see what happens. I'll be able to actually detect any auroral activity from where I'm at. It's going to have to be a little bit more intense in order to be able to do that, though. We'll see what happens. Solar winds are really not showing anything right now. Solar winds are kind of low at 345 kilometers per second. And the particle density, that's also pretty low at only 3.62 protons per cubic centimeter. So nothing that way is indicating any auroral activity. Just stuff that's showing up in the sky. So nothing from the solar wind itself. It's some other phenomena that's doing it. Let's check in it. Yeah, let's see. All right, let's go to going to do a bit of observing talk tonight. Got some new stuff to look at. There is an asteroid approaching the Earth. If you've been hearing about this, getting pretty close. Close to approach, I think, is going to be September the 1st. It's asteroid 3122, the name of Florence. So that would mean it's approximately the 3,000 plus asteroid discovered. This one's about 3 miles in diameter. And it's going to be coming pretty close to the Earth. Now, if you want some quick data on that, go to spaceweather.com. Look down near the bottom where it says Near Earth Asteroids. And look at the date of September the 1st. Interestingly, they usually highlight the ones that are fairly close. This one's not highlighted because it's not really close, but it is really big. So tomorrow, let's just go with tomorrow, just to digress a little bit. Tomorrow, we've got one that's just a little bit over a million miles away, but it's pretty small, only about 120 feet across or something like that. On the September the 2nd, we've got one that's about 600,000 miles from us, but it's going to be pretty small, only about 50 feet or so, no big deal there. On October the 12th, there's going to be one that's about 45 feet across, but it's only going to be 20,000 miles away from us. That's pretty close, one-tenth of the distance to the moon. Now, the one coming up September 1st is going to be a little over 4 million miles away from us. That's compared to the other ones, yeah, that seems like quite a long distance away, but the size of it is what makes it interesting. This thing is about 3 miles or more in diameter. So that kind of makes up for it. So that means, yes, the predictions are that it will be actually visible in the nighttime sky. If you know where to look, I'm going to put a bunch of links into our chat room here. I've got some different places to check out the information. Different websites have different star charts. So combining them all together will help you be able to see. It's supposed to be estimated between 9th and 10th magnitude, so that would mean a large pair of binoculars might be able to pick it up. Definitely a 4-inch telescope will pick it up, 6-inch telescope, anything like that will have no problem picking up something at that brightness. Now, it's going to be a bit of a challenge because it's kind of going through a rather populated stellar region of the sky. Let me put the first link into our chat room here. And this one is from Earth Sky. Right, here it comes. I've got about 3 or 4 links to put in. So each one has some different type of star chart on it. All right, let's see where this one's from. This next one is from the Sky Live. So some star charts are more detailed than others, and some star charts are wider angles. It's kind of a mix on what star chart you'll need. Now, the wide angle star chart is really good for locating the general area of sky that you need to look for. The detailed star chart, though, will help you find it amongst the faint stars. You have to do pretty much combined star charts. One star's pretty good in that it will actually identify maybe 1 to 3 stars in the field of view. Got to zoom in pretty close. And it just gives a designation for that star. It's actually part of the Hipparchus catalog. So if you can use that number on, if you have a computer generated, you know, star chart, you can type in that number in the search and be able to zoom in with your computerized star chart and figure out where it is exactly. So you have to have kind of both. You have to know the general sky. You got to know the date where it's going to be. And then you have to have a close-in star chart in order to be able to see it. It's going to move not that fast. So 4 million miles away. You should detect motion after a little while of observing it, depending on how much magnification. The more magnification you actually use, the more motion across the nighttime sky you'll be able to detect with it. So if you're using fairly low power binoculars, you probably won't see any motions. It's going to be hard to find out which one it is. One good way of doing it is, you kind of point your optics, a small telescope or large binoculars at the star field, draw the star field as accurately as you can, and wait a while, and especially the next day, of course, we'll definitely show it. Look at that same star field. If you can identify the stars in the star field and one of them is missing, that was the asteroid. So if you have crank up some power in your telescope, you might be able to maybe wait an hour or so and then detect some motion amongst the stars. The star pattern will change. The spacing between the star and the asteroid will change. Got to really use the same magnification, though. So don't switch eyepieces and think, oh, wait, I was losing 100 power and it's this far apart. Then I switched over to 200 power, 10 minutes later, and it's much farther apart. Well, no, you just changed the magnification and the field of view, and that's what affected your view more than anything else. So it really helps if you use the same magnification on the same star field. Give it a shot. It's happening kind of right now through the next several days. There's quite a few days of being able to observe this thing. Right now it's the brightest. So it's the best time. It's all going to depend on your weather too. Like I think I've got clear tonight, moderately clear tomorrow, and then I'm going to start getting cloudy. I think I was supposed to be cloudy around closest approach September the 1st. So if I can get out, tomorrow night or something like that, that would be the best chance for me to try to find it. And it's going to depend on, your where in the sky it's at. If you're going to have trees, buildings, things like that in the way, you're going to have to take all that in consideration. Let's see. One site is from AstroBob. They do some pretty good stuff, so check that out. They've got a nice star chart. Let's see. So August 30th, it is in Aquarius. Give you an idea where that's at. Well, if you can find Scorpius and Sagittarius, go east to Capricorn, and then just north of Capricorn, you'll have the western edge of Aquarius. That's where it starts out. A lot of stars in that region. And then it slips up through, kind of catches the corner technically of a constellation called Equinox? I can't remember what it is. Well, anyways, it's going to go into Delphinus. Delphinus is a pretty popular northern constellation, and it's kind of going to go right through the circle of Delphinus. So that will be a good one. That will be on late September the 1st. So that might be a good spot if it's prime observing for you to go look for that, because there's fewer stars right in the head of the dolphin there, and it's going to go right through the head of the dolphin. So that'll help you identify it a little bit better. And then from there, it's going to go north of Vulpecula, kind of a region kind of lacking a lot of bright stars. And then it's going to go right through the middle of Cygnus. That's going to be one of the toughest. That's right around the 5th. Now it's starting to fade at this point, and it's going to go right through the Milky Way, band of the Milky Way, which means a lot of stars to look at and try to figure out which one doesn't belong there. So that's when it's getting tough. So I would shoot for any time now. You're going to have a little bit clearer southern horizon if you live in the northern hemisphere like I do. Then it's going to start heading up, and I think if it's still kind of bright, if you get a little bit bigger telescope as it starts to fade, the head of the dolphin will be one of the best ones to go for. Give it a shot. A lot of detailed star charts on this Astrobob site. There's a general wide angle one. Then we've got some more detailed, shows stars down to a fainter magnitude. Let's see. This one in Astrobob shows stars down to 9.5, so it'll be about as bright as the fainter stars in there. What could be confusing is that if your telescope will actually pick up fainter than 10th magnitude, you know, you get into an 8-inch telescope and you start picking up 11th magnitude stars, maybe even a little bit fainter than that. Yeah, you're going to get extra stars that aren't showing up in the star chart, so it's going to be a little bit more difficult to figure out which one's which. Give it a shot. See if you can see it. Always fun to watch a close-by asteroid, and this is going to be our last time for having this asteroid this close. It's in obviously a fairly close orbit to the Earth's orbit around the sun, but just a matter of the timing when the Earth and this object come close again, it's going to be quite a while. So give it a shot. See if you can see it. A little extra challenge for beginning observers. Definitely possible, you know, depending on how well you can hook your telescope. If it's computer controlled, you got a better chance. If you're a star hopper, could be a bit of a challenge. Give it a shot and see if you can do your best on this one. All right, let's see. I think I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 links in our chat room. Let me make sure 1, 2, 3, 4. Yep, we'll get those into our Facebook page, Space Pirate Facebook page. So hopefully you're friends with Space Pirate or following Space Pirate Facebook page. Then you could go look at those links and get those star charts off there too. A big help. And I think sometimes they even get onto our homepage too. So we'll see. All right, let's see what's happening. Around our local universe as far as, let's see, let's go with NASA launches and exits, landing, undocking, and landing. All right, got one from NASA, International Space Station, Expedition 52, undock and landing starting September the 2nd, 2017 at 9:22 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Coming up in a few more days, the astronauts Peggy Wilson, Jack Fisher, and Fyodor Yurchikhin, the Russian Space Agency, will undock their Soyuz MS-04 and land in Kazakhstan. I think the timing is always wrong for me when this happens, that I can't ever have the space station flying over me here in the U.S. when they undock. But I'll double check it again, but I didn't get as much information off of this one like they sometimes do. Doesn't say, I don't think it says a difference between undocking and landing, how long it's going to be. So, and I just generally looked it up and doesn't say. Usually it's only a short time between the time they undock and they actually land. Usually that's during the daytime, for instance. So I know that it's definitely not, even if it is over my area, not possible to see the undocking. And I also wanted to see, like, just after undocking and just before docking, I want to see the two together, but I've never been able to do that. So I'll keep working on it. Maybe I'll get the timing just right sometime and be able to get a view like that. Well, let's look around what's happening in the skies right now as far as the moon and the planets. Yesterday was first quarter moon. Today we've got the moon at apogee. That means it's at its farthest point in its orbit around the Earth today. And also you find the moon is kind of near Saturn. Saturn will be 4 degrees south of the moon tonight. Neptune is at opposition, by the way. I'll switch to a star chart and tell you where that's at. Let's see. That's next Tuesday. Neptune be at opposite, close enough for right now. Also next Tuesday, Jupiter will be 3 degrees north of Spica. That's actually getting pretty low. So if you want to get your last views of Jupiter, you better start looking soon because we're starting to get into evening. It's already into evening twilight. You're going to have a really good western horizon in order to be able to pick it up. So you can still observe it in pretty bright twilight. even with the sun like right on the horizon or even a little bit above, it is possible to see Jupiter. That sometimes you actually get clearer air. So this is what I always recommend. Before we lose Jupiter to daylight, make sure you start looking at Jupiter. Pick some really clear weather. Get the best conditions you possibly can and check it for impacts. Sometimes it's happened before, there will be an impact of something on Jupiter. And if you can catch a view of it and record it just before it goes, you know, behind the sun, this is the time when most people stop observing Jupiter because it is in twilight. So start observing it. You might see the impact and nobody else will see it. Then you can report it. Then other people look at it. And then we'll have to wait until after it comes back out again. And as again, when it gets behind the sun, it gets back into the morning skies. And so I still tell people, it's like, get up early, start observing Jupiter as soon as it's in the morning skies, because there might have been an impact while it was on the other side of the sun. And you might be the one that actually sees it. Now, Jupiter rotates once every 10 hours. So it gives you a very narrow window of being able to observe it. But pretty much every time you go out at night to look at Jupiter, you should see a different surface. It should rotate enough after a couple days or after a day to actually see a different area of Jupiter itself. So if you do some regular observing of Jupiter right now as it's setting early each night, you should get a different surface of the planet. And again, that will help you be able to see if there's any impacts, which will look like dark smudges on Jupiter. But confirm your observations. There are still moon shadows going across the face of Jupiter, and there are still moons going across the face of Jupiter. So make sure you eliminate both of those shadows and moons on the face of Jupiter when you're doing your observations. And then if it's a black smudgy spot, you've got a good chance of being able to discover it. Keep trying that. Get these observations in. Everybody pretty much gives up on Jupiter when it gets this close to the sun. So give it a shot, give it a shot, give it a shot, and see if you can see something. You just never know. And then, of course, record your data, get it out there, and other people can confirm it too. So sometimes it might take a few days if you observe, you know, an impact. We might not have that face of Jupiter facing towards the Earth again, you know, while it's still up for another few more days. Well, actually, no, it, for your area, it might be a few more days before you actually see that surface again. So once you get the word out there, it would have to be people in other parts of the world that will be able to wait, you know, the 10 hours and then observe Jupiter at sunset again, or another part of the world will be able to observe it, and they can actually confirm your observations that way too. So do some observations of Jupiter before it goes away, and then I'll remind you later when it starts coming back to get those observations in again. All right, I'm going to bring up my star chart and see where we're at here. So we've got Jupiter really close to Spica, heading a little bit more towards the south. Again, this is my perspective from Northern Hemisphere. Antares, quite prominent. And Scorpius and Sagittarius still up there in the early part of the evening. So you want to get those last observations of those low, not above the horizon constellations also now before they start setting and don't become visible anymore. Of course, Saturn is the prime object to observe right now as it's almost due south in the evening. Like right now, according to my star chart, it's about 9:30-ish or so. So right about 9 o'clock, as it's getting dark, that would be the first object to look for, low in the south. And get some views of Saturn and see what you can zoom in on. So since we're talking about Saturn, let's go back to the Cassini, or the NASA website, and Cassini. The Cassini mission is almost over. So kind of a fun thing to do, if you can get your scope out there and show people the planet Saturn, you can tell them that there's a spacecraft circling around the planet Saturn, and about 2 weeks from now, it's going to actually crash into Saturn. Let me put this article from NASA into our chat room. All right, let me pop that in here. Can see me. All right. Just reading our chat room here a little bit. Platt Jones says, please don't sing Moon Shadows. Yeah, I didn't even do that during the eclipse, too. People used to do that so much. Oversung song for an eclipse and for Jupiter, too. All right, there's a link in about the last orbit of Cassini around Saturn. They're going to plunge it in. Let me click on that mission there, and let's see what the actual date is going to be here. Where is it? I had that link for Cassini, and it's not there. All right, let me go back another page. See where I had the whole article on Cassini. I think I got to skip it. Yeah, it's only going to be like 15 days, something like that, before Cassini takes its final plunge. Had an article on that. Sorry. Since I'm just here by myself tonight, I can't have Diane talk while I search through some websites that I wanted to check on. All right, here we go. Kind of slipped away here. All right, I can't find the article I had, but there's articles out there about its last bits of its mission. They're going to plunge it into the planet. It's going to burn up, so it won't leave space debris out around Saturn. So that'll be helpful for future space missions. It won't contaminate any the moons or the rings or ring particles or anything like that. They're still doing science right up till the time it no longer communicates back with the Earth. So there's still some instruments on board that will be active on, during its final plunge. It's still going to analyze as much data as it possibly can on its way in and send back everything it can. So once it's gone into the atmosphere and burned up, by the way, the light travel time is going to be about an hour. So it'll actually take an hour. That message will actually be traveling for about an hour back to the Earth while Cassini itself is no longer in existence. So you might want to think about that when we get those last bits of information. So get some observing in it right now of Jupiter, of Saturn, and then just realize, that space probe's there, and it's going to be gone in about 2 weeks, 18 days, something like that, I think. A few articles out there. So read on the missions, about the missions that are actually going to take place as they plunge in. Now, there will not be the cameras. The cameras will not be working the last day. It's all going to be the information transmitted back. Will not be images. It'll be all scientific data. So that's what they'll need all the bandwidth there for. So you won't see the last close image of Saturn from Cassini the very last day. Just the data will be coming back. So it's a little bit more important than an image itself. Well, we're about halfway through our program, so let's do a little station identification. You are listening to Space Pirate Radio here on astronomy.fm. It is Wednesday evening, and this one happens to be August the 30th, 2017, 9:30 in the evening for those of us here in the eastern portion of North America. Universal time, that would put it at August the 31st, Thursday morning, 1:30 in the morning. And we still have half our program left to go. So I hope you'll stick around. Now, if you've missed the first half and are just tuned in, you can always pick up the second half by listening in a little later, because we're going to repeat this program every 4 hours for the next 24 hours. You can catch it a little bit later. But don't forget, coming up after Space Pirate Radio, we have the usual rundown of programs, which should be the usual astronomy. I don't know if there's a – is there a Comet Watch tonight? I don't remember when Comet Watch is. But the usual should be the usual Astronomy Ireland, Planetary Radio, Naked Scientist, Naked Astronomy, all coming up after Space Pirate Radio. So continue sticking around. I want to say hi to our crew no Comet Watch tonight. Just got the confirmation. So a regular lineup. I want to say hi to the crew in our chat room tonight, and you can still board if you'd like to. Come on over to our chat room, astronomy.fm/chat. or just go to the homepage. You'll see where it says radio chat. I'm in there. I've got Richie in there, Black Projects, Glenn, Plaid Mac, Evil Spock, Plaid Joan, Plaid Sister, Observing Space, and Perry. Glad to have you here, everybody. Appreciate you being in the chat room with me. If you got any questions, if you've been thinking about anything to ask me, go ahead, type it in right now as I'm kind of reading the chat room before we go on to some more news items. And I'll answer your question. Let's see. Dark Side of the Moon. Somebody's going to play Dark Side of the Moon during Totality. You know, that's something I did forget to do. Is like sometimes I will bring a portable player along and I will play some space music during some astronomy event. And I forgot about doing that. Yeah, I could have put together a whole bunch of Totality-related music, space music, things like that. But, no, I forgot to do that. So, yeah, the next time, 2024, all right, I'll try to remember to bring some space music wherever I'm observing that event. But it's always good to bring... Not always, but it's fun to bring some space music when you have like the Perseid meteor shower or people are out observing. You have to kind of ask them if they don't want to intrude your music on other people too much. So sometimes people don't like that kind of music. They play their own music and then you have, you know, a bunch of people competing with their own music that they like to do during observing. And it gets to be a little bit too much too. So work it out politely with people when you're out with your telescopes and playing some music. Let's see. All right. Let's see what else we got going on here. Again, I'll start with the NASA website. A lot of good information there. New lander coming up for Mars. The next one planned is they want to know the InSight Mars lander is going to investigate the interior of Mars. So keep it at a brief article like that. So I don't like to report on missions until they actually launch. And just in case something can change, plans can change, even though they might be planning on it. But, you know, if it's not launching, we won't talk about it that much. And I was going to make the joke, and then I was not going to make the joke. And it's like, okay, maybe I'll make the joke. I hope they don't plan on investigating the interior by accidentally slamming the probe into the surface of Mars. Sorry about that, NASA. I like their missions, but couldn't resist that one. So got some images of the eclipse on the NASA website. Some pretty good ones from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. Has a picture of the solar eclipse taken from basically from the moon. So that's kind of an interesting set of images, being able to watch the Earth shadow from that far away. So yeah, they actually took the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is usually pointing down at the moon, and they turned it around to point at the Earth during the eclipse. I don't think any scientific value in that, but definitely some good publicity for NASA during a popular time like that. So if you hear some, I'm trying to think, have you heard any interesting stories that usually pop up on social media. You ask them here if you've heard some stuff that doesn't sound quite right. I try to look through social media during the week and try to remember the stories that are going around. Usually it's stuff that's sort of half true, half not true. I try to debunk that stuff that's going around on social media. If you get any stories like that, feel free to bring them into our chat room. Let me know that you're putting it in there, and then I'll try to look at that story and see if we can kind of... Sometimes they start out with a sort of a semi-true science story on social media, but then they retype it and editorialize it. They put a lot of... All right, here's an article. Let's see. This one is from SciTech Daily. I'll put it into our chat room. It's about the early universe and how... I'll read the title here. Science provide a theory on how the universe became filled with light. Originally, during the Big Bang, Yeah, there was that, you know, the big explosion, and everything was just blasted away. But then it went completely dark, and some of that darkness was because the universe filled with gas, and the gas prevented the light from coming out. So the idea, what they're trying to figure out here is, how did that first light start penetrating through the gas and spread out through the rest of the universe? And one way they're working on is an X-rays coming through the gas by looking at looking way back as far as they can to some galaxies. And the idea that some black holes might have been what actually caused some of the gas to open up back in the early universes. Basically, if you're inside of a cloud and you want to, you know, send a light signal out through the cloud, or you can't, because basically you light up the cloud and it doesn't go past that. So how do you get your light signal out, or you're just light out beyond the cloud? Well, one way is to have enough energy to blast a hole in the cloud. So there's a team, where are they from? They used the Chandra X-ray telescope to observe a galaxy called TOL 1247-232. It's located 600 million light years away from us. And it actually has ultraviolet light escaping from the galaxy. So they're kind of thinking this might be the way that ultraviolet light punched through the early universe from galaxies, from the Earth, caused by the black holes shooting some material out. Now, before it goes into the black hole, the material circling around it, gas mostly, will spin around very quickly, and there's a possibility that the black holes had stuff spinning around it, was actually able to kind of blow some of the gas away from it and allow the gas to come out of that galaxy and penetrate through the gas. So you can read that article in more detail. And that's the latest, and they're calling it a theory because they're actually using a galaxy that shows what they think has happened back in the earlier parts of the universe. Read that in a little bit more detail. And what else have we got going on? Let's see in the universe. Oh, let's see. A little bit of black hole information. Again, kind of the black hole thing, of what happens with black holes, how are they working. So some of the theories, according to this one article, may not be what was previously thought. Did I put that into our chat room? Let me see if I put that into our chat room here. Let me get into our chat room here. So this is an idea of laboratory here on the Earth called the Sandia National Laboratory, Z Machine. They're trying to make X-rays at the energetic level that are thought to be around black holes. Let's see what happens. One theory of things that happen around black holes is that, if I can get this right, that if you ionize, put enough energy into an atom, it'll ionize it. That means it'll basically supercharge up the electrons on the outer region of the atoms, and then the energy will dissipate. So the atom, the electron basically kind of gets closer to the center of the atom, and when that happens, it lets off a photon. And at high enough energies, it let out a photon of X-rays. Now, one idea was that some of those electrons don't emit photons because there's so much energy put into the atom that the electron doesn't go back to its lower level and emit photons, but the electron actually separates from the atom and drifts out into space without any photons. Well, there's some question about, does this really happen? All right, let me see. 20 years ago in physics, I'll read part of the article. Physicists declared that certain ionization stages of iron were present in the black hole's accretion disk. That's the matter that's surrounding the black hole itself. So basically, if you don't, they're looking at the spectra of black holes, looking in the X-ray area of it. And the idea is, well, if they don't see any X-rays, they think that maybe the electrons left the atom and it didn't actually lower its energy and emit the X-rays. Now there's a question about, does that really happen? So maybe that didn't happen. Maybe the electrons didn't leave the atom. So they're trying to... All right, sorry, it's kind of hard to explain because I don't know it that well. All right. So they're trying to prove by using... super high energy electrons here, X-rays here on the Earth to determine how things happen with particles circling around black holes, if that happens. Sorry, it's the best I can do. I only read the article once, and it's kind of hard for me to get back to it if I don't really know the subject that well. I understand it, but not enough to really explain it back to you. So that's why we put the articles in there, and you can kind of go back over and read them a little bit again and see if you kind of understand that. Just on the basics of black holes, there's black holes in pretty much every galaxy. A black hole is basically considered to be all gravity. It's something that usually it's a star that's collapsed to down to a point, and there's nothing left of it except for its gravity. Inside of galaxies, like the Milky Way, there's a giant black hole. So it was not just a star that collapsed, but it's multiple stars that created the center of our galaxy's black hole, or maybe just particles slammed together so much that they all combined together so much that they never became a star but became a black hole. We do know that there's black holes in galaxies because we can look at the stars, for instance, near the center of our own Milky Way galaxy. We can pick them up through different types of telescopes, infrared radio telescopes. We could actually watch them circle around the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And for them to circle around that fast around the center of the Milky Way galaxy, there has to be something with a very intense amount of gravity equal to the mass of several million stars. So they're pretty sure black holes exist because of how fast things spin around them. Can't see the black hole directly, so you have to have some way of detecting them. Stars circling around the black hole is one way. Also, if there's dust in the area of a black hole, the dust will start spinning around the black hole. It'll get faster and faster. It'll get more and more energized, and it'll emit things like infrared radiation, X-ray radiation, stuff like that. So they can actually see or detect those highly energized electromagnetic energies. And so you can see the area around a black hole, even though you don't actually see the black hole. And black holes are reasonably far away from us. So the one in the center of the galaxy is 25,000 light years away. So it's really hard to see something. It's not that big in our telescopes, so it's a really small area that even that the gas is going around. So it's also surrounded by other gases in our line of sight. So it's very difficult to tell what's actually happening to the material around a black hole. And this is just another way of determining what's happening with stuff that goes around a black hole. What happens when it gets super, super fast? Some of it will go in, some of it won't go in. How does it affect the surrounding area, the center of a galaxy? There are magnetic fields there that are disrupting the center of the galaxy. Also, there's ways of detecting that with radio waves, things like that. And there are black holes in other galaxies. How do those black holes compare to the one in our galaxy? Now, those are even farther away and harder to detect. So a lot of research on black holes and a lot of strange things being discovered about black holes and not fully understood. At the general principles, but definitely not completely understood about what's happening inside of black holes. I try to explain them as best I can. Oh, let's see. Did you hear about the astronomers that have mapped a star called Antares? And we were talking about earlier where Saturn's at. in the constellation of Sagittarius, between Sagittarius and Scorpius, low in the south for Northern Hemisphere observers. Well, that bright star in Scorpius is called Antares, and astronomers have used a method of actually imaging or detecting the way the gases move on the surface of that star. And that's been in some of the popular astronomical publications also lately. You can check that out. What's I going to go with? Oh, some other stuff coming up in our sky observing-wise. This end up with looking at Saturn and the Moon. First quarter, well, we've got Neptune at opposition. And in order to find Neptune, you want to find a fairly bright star towards the southeast from Northern Hemisphere. And what time does it rise? Looks like it rises about midnight or so. And what time will it be due south? Oh, about 1 o'clock in the morning. Bright star for Northern Hemisphere observers. Low to the south, a star called Fomalhaut. Kind of interesting star on its own because found to have a disk of material going around it, which is probably forming planets. Well, anyways, just north of Fomalhaut is where Neptune is. You won't be able to see it with your eyes. You'll easily be able to pick up Fomalhaut, but maybe it looks like about maybe 10 degrees north of Fomalhaut is where the planet Neptune is. You'll have to have a star chart for it, or a computer star chart. Neptune is at opposition. That means it's the opposite part of the sky from the sun, from the Earth. So as basically as the sun is setting, Neptune is rising. That means Neptune will be out all night long. Fairly easy to observe Neptune. At least be able to tell that you are looking at Neptune. A little bit of work for it because it's kind of a dark blue tinge to it. It's pretty small, so it's not until you actually increase the magnification that you can tell that bluish looking star is a planet. You have to crank up the magnification and make it a little bit bigger, and you can tell that that is actually Neptune. Brightness is not too bad. It's usually like eighth magnitude, something like that. So pretty easy to see in a small telescope. So give that a shot. Opposition means it's up all night long. And it's one of the very few planets that are out lately. And a little farther east than that is Uranus. Now, that one's a little easier to see. That one's about sixth magnitude, more of a blue-green color to it, and it's also a little closer to us, so a little less magnification will allow you to actually be able to pick it out as a planet. So two planets up around midnight, something like 1 o'clock or so, be able to pick out both of those. Oh, let me see if I can name this star. Now, Uranus is Neptune. Right next to a star called Torkelaris Septentrionalis. Yeah, isn't that a fun one? Look that one up. Let's see what constellation it is in. It's in Pisces. Looks like a letter O, like an Omicron Pisces, maybe. Look it up and see if you... I never heard of that one before. So see if you can figure out that star and go look it up. I wonder what it actually means, the name means, and wonder why they actually named that star. There's kind of a V-shape alignment of stars in Pisces that one V ends in a circle, the other ends in a really sloppy circle. Those are the two fish, kind of like a line between the two of them, and this is one of those stars in that line. It's one that's kind of in the middle and more towards the east. Let's see what magnitude this star is. An idea. It's about fourth magnitude. Visible with the naked eye. Definitely want to have some slightly darker skies, bright urban skies. Be kind of right on the edge of your vision or be able to see that. But two planets to go look for in the evening after you're done with Saturn and Saturn is set. So you still got a couple more. And then looking towards the east, we're getting into the what are Northern Hemisphere's winter constellations. First, you'll be able to see Pleiades, known as the Seven Sisters Rising. That's always one that confuses a lot of people. They go, hey, look, that's the Little Dipper. You have to do some correction on that. It's not the Little Dipper. The Pleiades, the Seven Sisters, looks like a miniature version of the Little Dipper, but it's a group of stars in the constellation of Taurus the Bull, and they call it asterism. After Taurus the Bull rises, then another asterism rises, a V-shaped group of stars with a bright red star in it called Aldebaran, and that asterism is called the Hyades. Both of them are in the constellation of Taurus the Bull. So our first signs here for Northern Hemisphere observers that, winter is approaching. And for Southern Hemisphere observers, summer is starting to approach. So a couple of the sky signals of what's happening, what's going to be rising. It's what ancient people did a long time ago. They designated some specific constellations and stars. It kind of gave them an idea of the seasons. When they first saw that star rising, they knew certain things were happening. One of them was Sirius to the Egyptians. That when they first saw that rising before twilight, they knew that the Nile was going to flood, if I'm not mistaken on that. Well, let me get back to our chat room and see if we've got any more questions here. Let's see. Let me flip back through. Could black holes be fusing matter and antimatter? I'd say no, it should all be matter, because that's all that is inside of us. If it's a stellar-sized black hole, which basically is when a really large star collapses, it basically explodes in a supernova, and what's left over, if it's more than 1.4 solar masses, will form into a black hole. So there should be all matter inside of a star, obviously, and that would all collapse into a black hole. So no, there wouldn't be any antimatter in that type of black hole. Also, black holes in the middle of galaxies are the combinations of millions, sometimes billions of stars all shrunk down together. And that would, again, be all matter that did that and not antimatter. Matter and antimatter come together. They just basically zap each other and go away. So there would not be matter and antimatter inside of a black hole in contact, and they would just cancel each other out. So that wouldn't work. Perry's question or statement here. The sun's corona is millions of degrees, while the chromosphere is only tens of thousands. Still a mystery why it's hotter further away. I think there's a probe going to the sun to study the corona. There is going to be a new probe that is going to get a little closer to the sun and study it. More theories and hypotheses on what could be heating up the corona. One is magnetic fields. I think there was some idea of possibly some like sound waves could be doing it, but I think it's mostly magnetic fields out in the corona, and that's what heats it up. Maybe not the process known that well, but I think that's the latest consensus, is that it has to do with magnetic fields out above the chromosphere and making those particles energized and heat up to a temperature of about a million degrees. And again, just reading some of the chat room stuff here. Let's see. Sorry about the little blank spot here. Let's see. All right. Nothing else in our chat room questions-wise, as I could see. If anybody's got one, pop it in now. We've only got a few more minutes left in our show. So this would be the time to ask those questions. If you have them for me, we'll do that. Or any subject you want to know, let me know about. Any question in astronomy, I will take. Don't be afraid to think it might be too basic of a question. Go right ahead and ask it, and I'll do my best about answer your question. One important thing I almost forgot to mention that is extremely important, an event coming up in just a couple of weeks. In fact, September the 19th, it is International Talk Like a Pirate Day. Arr, everybody. Yes, very important. Very important holiday to space pirates is Talk Like a Pirate Day, September the 19th. So look up the website, start practicing, look up your pirate words, and have them all together for September the 19th. Well, this is actually Tuesday, so I think we'll go over it more on Wednesday's show, the 19th, in a few more weeks, since our regular show's not on Tuesday. So we'll do that. We'll get ready for pirate phrases, especially we'll have to make up some space pirate phrases, because technically nobody can hear you talk pirate in space. So look up words. That'll be appropriate for that. I expect people in our chat room to have some good space pirate phrases for September the 20th is what it'll actually be. There we go. We're starting already in our chat room there. So that'll also be right around the September equinox. We have equal daylight, equal nighttime. So we'll talk about that a little bit more. So we've got more stuff to talk about right around September the 20th show, especially speak like a pirate. All right, just a couple of more minutes here. Anybody got anything left to go over? Anything you wanted me to talk about? Answer real quick. I don't have any pyramid programs or items to talk about tonight. All right, everybody. We'll kind of start winding down here a little bit. Got only less than a minute left. So we will think about heading on out here. Don't forget, we're going to repeat this program every 4 hours for the next 24 hours with the usual programming of Astronomy Ireland, Planetary Radio, Naked Astronomy, Naked Scientists, all coming up after Space Pirate Radio. So stick around for that. I'll see you all again next Wednesday. And hopefully our my co-captain Diane will be here and join us next Wednesday too. So we'll see how that goes. All right, everybody, about time for me to say goodbye. So appreciate all of you listening in tonight, and everybody in chat room, appreciate you being here too. Again, consider you part of the crew and members. Thanks all. Time for me to head on out. Good night, everybody.
We hope that you've enjoyed this program from AFM Radio, the broadcast service of Astronomy.fm. This program has been released under Creative Commons license. Please contact us for details. You may find more of our AFM original programs on our website. It's really easy to find us. We are Astronomy.fm. You may also find us in the iTunes radio listings near the top of the News Talk section, and also as an iTunes podcast selection. We'd love to hear your comments. Please email us at radio@astronomy.fm. Thanks so much for being part of the voice of astronomy around the world and across the known universe. This is Astronomy.fm Radio.
AFM.